Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leaning Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests with both experiences and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. You're more than welcome to ring in to the show to ask questions or make comments during the show. We also would like to encourage you to make a donation and help support this show and all of the services that we do provide through Toward the Light. For more information, please visit our websites towardthelight.org and towardthelight.info. Today we were to have Mr. Ned Dougherty as our special guest, but we were unable to get hold of him. So we've got someone special on today who was originally scheduled for 4th March. Listen to me, 4th November. I am in a time warp today. Please welcome to Toward the Light, Mr. David A. Warner. Hello, David.
Hello, Juliet. How are you?
Oh, not bad. How are you doing?
Not bad. Just preparing for the show here and collecting my thoughts. And I'm honored to be on the show, and thank you for calling me in at last moment to help out.
Well, great. Yes, it's good that we were able to have you, even though we were going to be more prepared for the 4th and being able to do the publicity and all of that. But things happen the way they do for a reason, so I'm feeling rather excited because I've been appreciating our dialogue and looking forward to finding out more about your experiences. Now, I know that you've had out-of-body experiences by the squillions, it would seem, and I honestly don't recall if you've also had near-death or has it just mainly been out-of-body experiences that you've, and spiritually transformative experiences.
It has only been out-of-body experiences, and I'm in no rush for any NDE anytime soon.
Well, I don't blame you, and certainly you don't have to have an NDE to have a very profound life-altering experience.
Definitely.
So why don't we start by getting into a bit of the history behind your getting into this, because I know that it's something that you've really been an earnest explore and doing a lot of research centered on out-of-body experiences. So what actually triggered this? Was it an experience that you had, or was it something that just aroused your interest in it that got you moving in this direction?
Well, definitely the prime mover behind my interest in out-of-body experiences. My friend, Matt G., I was at his house staying the night. This is like in the summer of 87, and he was in Detroit, and at the time, I was playing the guitar, and my friend was reading this book on the front cover. There was a woman sleeping, and she was like in light night clothes, and you could see a phantom image of her body coming out of her body. And my interesting thought was, and as I saw this, it was a phantom double image of her, and you could see her breasts, and she's naked. And I asked my friend Matt, "What are you reading?" And he explained to me about astral projection. And I'm like, "Oh, I thought you were reading some Playboy or Harlequin romance novel." But from there, as he explained to me about the out-of-body experiences and the different levels, plane levels, and spiritual consciousness, and traveling out of the body, soul travel, I became immediately immersed and interested. It's just like something that's pulled at me that I needed to know. And as I did, was able to finally be able to project within a couple of months of practicing nonstop and just being so dedicated to it, when I did have my first OBE, other similar events in the past, I could correlate those experiences that I didn't even realize that I had actually projected, and I just dismissed them as just a vivid dream or a hallucination. So there were, a few episodes in my past before leading up to that first experience that I just dismissed as just, you know, a dream or just hallucinating, and that's it. But from there, I really owe my friend Matt, you know, all the things in the world, and one big hug, because he has set me off on the last 20 years of pursuing the out-of-body, doing the research, the study, and just taking the time and just being devoted to it and sharing the information with the community and public. And it has been a real, it's been a very gradual process to becoming a more caring, a loving a person, and helping others in the community locally and globally. And it is definitely a life-changing event that it's a level of maturity that brings you from, you know, where I was personally to where I am now. I mean, it's like night and day. So going down this path, it was the right path, and it's just definitely, it's a beautiful experience, and I can't say nothing more about it. I'm just glad I was introduced to it.
Yeah, did you get that book, or did you get another book before having that, I should say, initial OBE that you had when you were actually aware that it was indeed an OBE, out of body experience? Were you reading a book, or did you just start sort of exploring the experience and then researching after that?
Well, when I was talking with my friend Matt that night, you know, he explained to me certain things to try, methods, techniques, and trying to actually produce the OBE. And there were a few books beyond that night that I actually researched and looked for, and then I actually started trying to read as much as I could possibly get my hands on. And some of the, training, some of the events that I would try to work on to actually be able to become awake in the dream, or to be able to have that OBE from a waking, falling asleep in a trance, and leaving consciousness state, it all stems from like exercises. One of the exercises that my friend explained to me is, like, during the day, you know, maybe write on a piece of paper or recite to yourself a good couple hundred times, I'm going to be conscious in the dream, I'm going to wake within the dream, and I'm going to leave the body, I'm going to recognize these incongruities in the dream and become conscious. And that's how I looked at it first, through that avenue. And how I actually first projected was like totally the opposite. It was falling into that trance state and becoming conscious, and right on that edge of sleep, in the border between awake and sleep, that's where the experience took place. And I was looking at a different way to project within the dream, but it occurred the opposite. And so some of the books that I would actually read were just awesome. Like, example, like Fox, Monroe, Janet Lee Mitchell was actually the book that I just loved, because of all the scientific data that she would work with different well-known at the time people like Ingo Swann on remote viewing, and others, different authors, different projectionists, that she was able to put this in a book, very English, easy to read text, scientific study research, very well documented. I just fell in love with the book, and as I just burned through it, it just all made sense. And it wasn't really up until that day, I just couldn't put the book down, and just leading into my experience, I tried to be brief, I kept wanting to read the book, and I was tired, I needed to take a nap, so I took my nap, but still on my mind, I wanted to read the book. So as I drifted into that light trance state with that intent on my mind to read the book, that's how I was able to project. So, I mean, anything that you do for exercise, mental recitation, writing it down, whatever it takes, you know, you got to train for it. You got to exercise. You're programming your subconscious, and you're letting your subconscious, you know, take the driver's seat and go. But you got to program it, and you got to read, and just, it's like training for an Olympic event, and it's nonstop. So all of it helped, the reading, the actual exercises, and the first experience, it came without me expecting it. And towards me not expecting it, I think it was more meaningful, a very impact, change of a life event that if I had produced it naturally on my own, then I don't think it would have been as rewarding versus not realizing when it was ready to hit. And when it did hit, it really smacked, you know, some sense into me. It's like somebody taking their hand and smacking you in the face and say, wake up.
So it was a very spontaneous event that took place when you did OBE that time.
Yeah, because for 2 months, I'm just, you know, so obsessed with this. I'm talking with family, friends, you know, strangers off the street, people I work with, and everybody's thinking, like, I'm just, like, just lost it. And I was just, I mean, if I set myself, my sights on something that I want to do, I'm going for it. Nothing can stop in my way. I'm going to reach that goal. I've always been so compulsive with that, and I just cannot stop. I gotta know. And for 2 months, I'm just hitting my head against the wall, and no results, no nothing. I'm documenting everything, you know, trying to recite every day, I will do this, I will do that, I will become conscious in the dream, blah, 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 everything, and nothing's producing. And then towards the last end of the 2 months, I kind of just said, you know what, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. And I kind of started falling to skepticism as well. And when I surrendered and just gave up, that's when the experience hit me, and it was a wake-up call.
Now, that's a very interesting point that you make, and a very good and valid one that I think all of us need to acknowledge and honor is when something is meant to be, and also the right time for it, the synchronicity, because that it is true with anything in our lives. We're so anxious for something to occur, and we want it to occur, and we will it to occur, and then when it doesn't, just like you were describing, we start to second guess ourselves, to question things, and it really is about the right timing as well.
Yeah.
You know, not
yeah.
that it's not the right thing, but just obviously there was a certain period of time where things had to evolve and develop, sort of like an incubation that occurred with you, and then all of a sudden you were ready for the experience, and then it happened.
I contribute this to other things too, like you know love, school, work. You know, you work so hard at something, you hit the books, and you know you're working full time at a low paying job, and you question yourself, or I question myself, is this all I'm going to do in all my life? Am I just going to be school, work, and that's it? And then one day I finally graduate, and then I start, here I am, in a full-time, you know, professional job, and it's like all that time and all that patience and all that work, you know, it finally paid off, but it came unexpectedly. And the same thing with love, too. I looked for the longest time, kind of gave up, just did my own thing, and out of nowhere, I meet my wife, and here I am, happily married, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. And it came naturally without even trying, and I think that's where the greatest gift is.
That's a wonderful point, and I hope everybody is listening to this and really taking note that things can and do and will happen, but there's a special timing, a mm-hmm. special flow for all of this to unfold and manifest for us. So when you actually started to experience going out of body, did they start to occur more as it would with a disciplined exercise, or were they still kind of spontaneous at first?
At first, for about the first half year, they were spontaneous. I would document the times and, you know, the experience, and I kept pursuing reading, exercising, and training for this. And I couldn't figure out, you know, what was the magic ingredient So for the first half year, I mean, I would experience, you know, the wide awake induced OBE versus wakening in the dream and projecting from that. So all my experiences, I'd say about 90% of them, start from the wide awake induced state or the trance state, you know, going drifting into a light sleep and then projecting that way, wide awake. And I didn't really know how to control it, and it was a lot of guesswork. So, I mean, I did take my notes down and try to reflect on what worked, what didn't work, you know, tracking food, time, the time of the year, and, you know, all types of variables there. And it wasn't really until, like, after I was, you know, about a half year later, I just put my foot down and said, listen, you know, I want better control of it. You know, I had my convictions, and I want to project at least every week or every other 2 weeks, 2-3 times during the week. And as I had that strength, that desire to do so, it started to happen where I was able to at least pull 1 or 2 experiences out a week. And as I started to build up that muscle, then it started to become almost like a daily thing. And 2 years into, you know, projecting, you know, I'm up there in the numbers, and not that I'm, you know, quantity versus quality, but, you know, the experience started getting longer. You know, as I start first writing down the information on a pad of paper, it would be like a couple lines of text, and then, you know, a year or two later, it's like 15, 20 pages back and forth of the experience. So it's a gradual process. It's baby steps. It's being patient, and it's developing that, you know, when you first get out and realize, you know, everything's by trial and error, and you just gotta, you know, you just gotta just work with it day by day and never give up and just keep going until you do get up into those, you know, 15, 20 pages of, you know, writing down the experience or being out for a half an hour to 40 minutes. It just does not come overnight. And that's, again, it's just, it's maturity and it's wisdom and it's realizing things do come in time. There is no fast food, recipe to getting out of the body, to anything that you do in life. You can't cut corners. You gotta follow the steps. And that's what I learned, being patient through that process. And then over the years, you know, it starts to becoming second nature, and then I can pretty much demand when I want to project and to be able to enter that state.
And did you find that there was a certain event that occurred that enabled you, or triggered, perhaps I should say, you're repeatedly and frequently going out of body?
That's an excellent question. As I've progressed, I got really serious for the last 3-4 years now of doing real tracking, and I have on my site a spreadsheet which I can share with anybody that wants to go to and download and see what I've done for the last 3 years. The key ingredients that I find is definitely sleep the night before. Another one would be the times of the experiences. So, like, example, most of my experience work will occur, and this is also based on people's, you know, schedules. I am a person that's a night owl, and I also work second shift. So when I go to bed, it's about, you know, 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, but my experiences will occur between 9, 10, 11, and 12 o'clock.
In the morning?
Yes. And that's been consistent of what I've seen over time and time again. And also, the sleep that you get the day before is a crucial element, because if you only get like 2-3 hours of sleep, the next day going into sleep, you're just going to just be tired. And I find that if you can wake up during the morning, you know, spontaneously wake, get up, for maybe about a half an hour, hour or so, then go back to bed, those chances, those odds of being able to put yourself into that trance state and leave the body are greater. As for my research for foods, I have not seen anything that really points to a magical pill or a certain Starbucks latte or frappuccino to help project. But really it comes down to, I've seen it specific days. Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays are my strongest out of any of the days. And I don't know why. Not to say that I don't project Monday through Thursday. They're there. But as I record the numbers and write down the times, and the type of experience, it paints a clearer picture where you are on the radar and that you can focus and you can tune into those specific times. Not that I don't try to project at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning when I go to bed, but, you know, it's something that I have to accept. These are the time range, and this is how much sleep the night before, like 7 to 8 hours of sleep, and the actual specific day that I'm going to have a favorable experience. I think a lot of people, when they first start out projecting, they ignore all the tracking, and they don't know randomly when the next experience is going to happen. And what I have found by doing this, it really, again, I stress, it paints a clearer picture, and you'll be able to see where you are on the radar, and it'll also show progress, too, versus just, you know, I don't know, or yeah, my best times are, if it's documented, you know exactly where it exists.
Well, that's a very interesting point that you make, that you fared better doing that after you'd had rest, and then you actually get up, and funnily enough, we've got pretty much the same exact schedule with my work. I too typically get to bed anywhere from 2 to 4 o'clock in the morning, and then we'll sleep in until anywhere between 10 and noon. But you actually would get up and then go back to bed, correct?
Yeah, most of the time I'll just get up, pop on the computer, read a few emails, and, you know, do a little surf and read some, you know, CNN news, and then just go back to bed, and then, you know, the way I go.
And you're actually able to relax after all that stimuli?
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, it's feeling drowsy. You're awake, but, you know, you're still a little drowsy, tired. So it's a good mixture, I think. And a lot of times I've seen, like, if I get up early in the morning, like around 6 or 7, I'll be up for about 3-4 hours, and then it'll be like around 12 noon. You know, have like a light lunch or whatever, and then take a little nap, and the way I go. Because you're on a, you know, you need to rest, but you're at a light sleep phase at noontime. And it's something about that to where it's a light nap that it's easier to remember and not slip into a deeper sleep that you can just, you know, I guess it's like your borderline, and you stay on that one line between awake and falling asleep, and you're just trolling in that area where it's easier to come back and to realize, hey, I'm in that trance state, versus just going straight down into a deeper sleep that's easier to project.
Okay. I noticed, too, that when I'm getting up in the morning, I always feel more relaxed and like I could eat more easily, go back to sleep. Yeah, when I go to bed at night, or actually it's in the morning, I'm wide awake. I'm very, very hyper alert when I first go to bed. So that's a very interesting point that you make there. And I wanted to ask you also, what was it that caused you to, even using your own words, to be obsessed about this, that just got you so interested? And it's almost as if there was a recognition, I need to be doing this. There was some very special connection there between, you know, you're sort of stumbling upon the out-of-body experience and that phenomena. What was it that really drew you to just go so deeply into it?
I would basically say, you know, the life after death survival. Okay. Does it exist? Does it not exist? And certain things in my life of interest that really grab me, that I want to learn, it's either there has to be some kind of, you know, motivation behind that to actually want to, you know, project. Or I'm a musician, and I'm a classical guitarist, composer, and a writer, and I do a lot of collaborating with people online. And I've been playing for the last 20-some years. And I enjoy being able to share myself musically and to be able to play. And when I first approached guitar, it was just something, you know, musically I wanted to learn. I wanted to be able to express myself. And I think the same thing with, you know, projection, you know, the scientific part of it, you know, the data validating life after death, you know, that was really interested, you know, really pulling at me too. But I also do feel that somebody was behind the curtain pulling the strings, nudging me a little bit. Hey, you know, you need to look at this. This is, you know, this is all set. This is what you're going to do for the next 20 years, you know, and beyond, to help other people. And you're going to learn that process of becoming mature and spiritually and religiously, and this is going to be your path. And the same thing with other things that I've done in my life. I knew exactly what I wanted to do when I first turned on that Apple IIe computer back in 84. I wanted to be a computer programmer, IT technician, network specialist, and that's what I am today. It's always been that one thing. I know what I want. And with OBEs, near-death experiences, life after death, I never really was conscious about the NDE in the past. It wasn't until my friend explained to me about the OBE, it just, something inside me just grabbed me and said, this is it. You got to find out for yourself. I guess curiosity killed the cat, and it definitely killed the cat on this one. And it's just certain things, you know, why does this person like this type of music and this person doesn't like that type of music? And I guess there was a level of maturity or immaturity when I was younger when I first approached OBE. I thought it was going to be all just flying around, checking out girls' locker rooms and all that stuff. But when I did have that first experience, I realized this is not what it's going to be really about. There's a lot more to it than just that. And not to say that I haven't done that stuff before in the past, but it was a gradual process of arriving where I am at now, that it's just it's a level of maturity and, you know, a free will spirited too, as I was younger, and realizing, okay, this OBE thing, there's a lot more than just, you know, flying around, and I wanted to dive deeper and more spiritually into it, and I wanted to learn.
Now, wouldn't you say that a great part of the OBE is self-discovery?
Mm-hmm.
Really getting to know yourself better.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, definitely. And, I mean, when I'm out there projecting, it's like I am there, I'm there in the now, and it's a very beautiful experience. And, you know, the guides that I have come across in the past, and I've encountered, you know, visitations from angels who've helped me move into the higher levels. And what I've learned from the OBE of self-discovery and through help on that side, and also on this physical plane level, of how I can use that information, you know, through my website of helping other people or taking part in the community. Just a year ago, I became a hospice volunteer to a companion to the dying, and it's a very beautiful experience to help somebody in that time. You know, most of the people that I work with, patients, their spouses have passed on. Their family members are like across the state or across the world, and they're there dying alone. And I'm there to help them. So, you know, through all that, through that self-discovery, it's a very rewarding experience, and it goes way deeper and higher than just sneaking out of the body and then spying on your neighbor or going into that woman's locker room. There's a deeper and more profound meaning than just that.
Well, now, did you have an experience where you encountered guides, for example?
Yeah, my first experience, I can recall correctly, a lot of my experiences first start out at my mom and dad's house. And when I first started projecting, I didn't really want to go outside. I wanted to kind of just, you know, take my baby steps and just try this, try that in my mom, dad's house, and, you know, that's it. Now, I remember there were two women, or two gals, and I was in the front room, kitchen or whatever, and they're trying to push me out into the backyard, and I'm like, I don't want to go. And they're just doing everything. They're standing in the air. They're floating in the air, pushing on my butt, get out the door. And I kept fighting them. And I'm like, I'm not going, I'm not going, I'm not going, I'm not going. And then they just delivered an incredible force, which pushed me out. And as they pushed me out, everything absolutely changed, where it's like something that you would see almost like in the movies, where you'd see the clouds and you'd see like a city of crystal. And it was just the most beautiful thing you ever seen in your life. And, you know, it was a different vibrational feel. It was definitely harmonious and loving. And I'm thinking to myself, my God, these gals were right, and I'm fighting them all the time. And once they, you know, pushed me into the higher realms, this is what I'm seeing. So those were definitely guides, you know, helping me get past that fear of going out. And leading up to that previous, I must have been in my mom and dad's house at least over a good couple hundred times before I took that jump outside. And so that was like really the first encounter that I had with some type of guide.
Now, were you living at your mom and dad's house when you first started OBing, or was that just the vantage point from where you found yourself?
Yes, I was living at my mom and dad's house at the time.
Okay, okay. And then you just evolved from there. I think that's really wonderful. And so having these experiences, did they actually affirm or validate for you the afterlife, life after death, that consciousness does survive death of the body? What was it that actually was a catalyst for your, you know, bringing that home for you as being true?
Well, as I've read a lot of different authors, you know, over the years, over the 20 years that I've been pursuing this and doing all my tracking, everything from validations to, you know, recognizing the different layers of consciousness, you know, dream, wide awake induced, OBEs, false awakenings, lucid dreams, and recognizing the different layers and using those vehicles to project. And as for the, you know, reading different authors and testing and experimenting over a period of time and arriving at, you know, validations that are like right on the mark. You know, over the last 3 years now, I've had over close to 40 validations that are just straight on the mark, no around the bush, you know, questionable experiences. They're just right on the mark. And as I kept researching this and diving into it, I came to that realization that somebody is definitely behind the curtain, you know, pulling the strings. This is not hallucinatory. It's a personal spiritual experience that has definitely brought me closer to God and Christ, and that's, I am a Christian and I follow that, I follow my religion. And of all, for the last 20 years of how this has helped me to where I am now, opening up my sight, helping people as a hospice volunteer doing community work, you know, doing radio interviews, working on a book, and everything else that I contribute to is leaving the body. And it definitely has that validation for me personally that there is a life after death. There is no question in my mind, it does exist. And I guess where you have to be careful is that you just can't take every single experience. Oh yeah, it's real, and you know that's a validation. I don't look for these experiences. These experiences come natural to me. And when I first started out, I tried going that route, and then after kind of giving up on it and let these experiences flow through me, they start to happen. And there's no question or doubt that this experience was able to validate, you know, life after death. It's a personal thing. People can be skeptic all they want to. That is great, but you got to do the work and you got to find it out for yourself. I can preach until the cows come home, and I can tell every single experience, everything that I validated, all the work. But until you experience it yourself and you're able to validate for yourself and see the big picture by tracking, then you'll understand about definitely the life after death and the spiritual transformation and over the years of how this really makes, you know, one person more caring, more open, and more loving, and to help others. It's just not just going out of the body, doing a playing card experiment, coming back, getting your results. It's a deeper and more moving experience than just, you know, trying to tangibly prove, you know, apples to oranges.
Well, I think that this is a wonderful point that you're making here, too. And of course, I've been exposed to, as I'm sure you have, you know, there's lots of wonderful people and institutions that are centered around the out-of-body experience, not the least of which is the Monroe Institute,
mm-hmm.
and also the International Institute of Projectology and Conscientology, IIPC. And Edgar Cayce has written about it, and even Raymond Moody has done work with this. And it is something very deep and profound, and it's not just an amusement sort of activity that someone goes through.
Exactly.
Are you currently working on a book about this or about your experiences?
Yeah, I am definitely working on the book, and I'm titling it after my website, Invisible Light. And I want to do a little bit different from what other OB authors do, just talking about the mechanics and, you know, the different beliefs, religion, drugs, sex, and all that stuff, and going down that road. I want to base it really more on a bibliography of my life. I kind of want to integrate this book to where people can actually use this, to where they can go to my site online and pull experiences and listen to or watch videos. I also want to do some fun things too, like maybe put some pop-ups, you know, like a children's book, like, you know, you open up the book page and you pull the pop-up and a castle comes out, or the I'm joking. but I want to make it a little bit different from just your standard, you know, author. I want to make it more exciting, you know, why these experiences took place, and what was I thinking at that moment in time. I want people to be able to interact with each other, too, on this book and be able to discuss this and be able to communicate through my website and communicate with me, too, and also show, you know, pros and cons of how one communicates, interacts with the OB, how they approach it based on their intent for good or for bad. And I want to kind of make it like a media book where I can also do, you know, voice where people can listen to it as well. So I want to have it, I want it to be different. You know, I want to be able to tell a story of my experiences and how this has helped me along the last 20 years of my life, and how it has been a changing life experience. And I think that's something that I'd like to see it completed before 2010, and I'm trying to get the energy and the discipline to at least work on it an hour a day. And I know there's a lot of grammar and spelling errors, and I'm going to be reading it over and over and over. It's just putting my thoughts down, pinning them down, and then developing the chapters and reading it to where it will really entertain the actual reader, to where they don't want to put that book down. They want to read it from beginning to end and be able to use my site as another means, an extension off of that, too.
So well, let's give your website out to our listeners. It is invisiblelight.com. And it's a great site. Looks like you're doing a lot of work on it. And I just went on there a little while ago trying to see the journals. I guess you've got the journals all in a downloadable format of a Word document. In other words, they're not actually on your website, correct? Because I wasn't able to find them. So perhaps you can advise the listeners how to access some of the data, the information you've got on your site, because it's certainly worth knowing about. And I notice also you've got something about audio videos. So perhaps you can tell us a little bit about that and how to access the information.
Well, first of all, the website is laid out in about 7 different screens. I have, first of all, the journal section, and I have the tracking statistical. I also have the audio video section. And the other sections are basically about how I became, you know, affiliated with the OBE, links, resources, a guest book. So please, people, start putting your inputs in there and leaving, you know, sign the guest book, because I worked really hard putting that together and I'm all happy on it and, like, good stuff there. But to really get into the site, you have to fill out a contact form, and I send you an authorization ID password. And then the 3 areas that you can get into, you put the user ID and the password in, and then you'll see it all separated with folders, like the journals. If you go in the journals folder in the journal section, the experience section, it'll drill down, and you'll see, like, from 1987 up to the present, and it's all categorized by month. And then each experience itself, I have a date title for reference, and then you can just listen to it, download it, stream it, whatever you're preferred for listening to the audio. Also, some of the experiences, the real good ones that I feel like I needed to type them out, you can read those too in Word document format, text document, whatever your way of reading documents. The biggest thing that I see is that people keep asking me, why do I have forms, or why do you have an ID password? I do like communicating with the public and kind of getting a general sense and ideas. People are actually people visiting my site. And I, from time to time, I will read the email versus just sending off just the ID password and communicate and help those, too, with, you know, their experiences and whatever they want to ask. I like that interaction. I think if I start getting real big to the point where I can't do it anymore, I might just go automatic. But for right now, it's a personal site, and it's nice to be able to interact with the public and the visitors. And everything that's in there, from audio, video, my past radio interviews, I've done experiments where I was able to record my physical body during the OBE, and I have that on video. I've also recorded my heart rate and my breathing during the OBE.
How did you do that?
Well, I got the idea. My wife, she was at a garage sale. She bought a stethoscope, and I don't know. It's one of those things that I think it was like for a Halloween costume. And I took the stethoscope, put a microphone into it, and then I let it into the computer, which I used a program to record the audio. So I taped the stethoscope to my chest. So for, I'd say maybe out of 10 different times, I was able to capture the OBE while it was recording my heart rate, my breathing at the same time. So it did take a while to get that. And I just, you know, it's like I almost know when I'm going to project, or that night before, I just feel like some kind of energy flowing through me that I know I'm just going to project. And so sometimes it can be hit and miss trying to get a video of myself, you know, capturing the physical body during an OBE or with the recording of what I did. So that's up there too. And I've had the opportunity to talk with my local pastor, Ralph Vonderink. We talked about religion and out-of-body experience, spiritualism and everything, and talked for about a good couple hours, and that's on there, that audio discussion. And we arrived at basically, you know, anything in life, you know, if it's religion, if it's Christianity, if you're Judaism or Muslim, whatever belief or practice creed that you follow, it all comes down to intent and how you approach that, you know, religion. And if it's an OBE and you're pursuing that, it's based on your intent. You can either do it for good or you can do it for bad. And so if this brings you closer to God, you know, so be it. Go for it. You know,
I think that's the important thing, the experiences that are going to lead you closer to the discovery of your own divine heritage, as well as being closer to Source and just having a deeper understanding of the truths of who we really are and what we're capable of doing, and the fact that we're so much more than just wearing this earth suit that we're trotting around in.
Mm-hmm. It is
something that is very deep. Now, I think our listeners would really like to know about how this affects other people who are around you, and obviously you are married and you probably share your space with your wife. How does that impact your OBEs, and how does your OBEing impact her, or does anything happen? As opposed to, you know, being like myself, who's all alone, and of course I'm not going to be affected by anybody else present in my space. So how does that work for you when somebody else is around?
Well, when I was younger, you know, as I was expressing to my parents and, you know, family and friends, they just thought I was just crazy, so they just looked at it as just, okay, whatever, that's just Dave. But after 20 years down the road, and they see the results, and they actually see the tangible proof of how this has changed me to becoming who I am now, then they can't just say, yeah, that was just Dave. You know, there's something definitely behind it. Mm-hmm. And yes, there was a friction in the beginning when I didn't meet my wife. In the beginning of our marriage, I did explain to her about, I used to, you know, astral project OBEs in the past, because there was a time where I needed to relax from it, not be on fire as I was, and I needed to focus on physical things, and I kind of fell out of it. I still projected, but on a lighter scale. Now, as a few things had happened in my life where I wanted to, improve my quality of life by removing, like, drinking, alcohol, I was a social drinker, and I just got to the point where it's like, you know, I want to lose some weight. I can't be drinking all the time if I want to lose weight. And then as I stopped drinking alcohol, you know, 3-4 months later, my experiences started coming back full force. And I started at it for just on it for 2 years, 2-3 years straight. And as my wife was very hesitant and just thought it was just, you know, all around bad, negative, but she started seeing, you know, these things, you know, come through me, you know, becoming a hospice volunteer, spiritual support to the dying, also taking part in AIDS walks, or socially drinking. I don't drink anymore. Doing radio interviews, helping people through my website, getting closer to God. I've taken on reading the Bible from beginning to end, the Holy Bible, and I've never done that. And there are just so many things that my wife started to realize, and as I tried to explain to her over and over and over and over again in the past, and she just, you know, would think, you know, whatever, I don't want to hear it. But she started seeing these things good come from it. And so how can you argue something that is good coming from it. How can you argue me going into the darkest, deep depths of somebody's room that is dying of cancer and me giving them love? How can you argue that, you know, I'm able to experience this projection and relay this information to somebody who's dying that can help them? How can you argue that? How can you argue that I'm very passionate at what I do by helping other people? And so as she realized this, and other, you know, close friends to me started to see this transition, they realized that, you know, it's just not the, you know, Dave in left field. It's a lot more. It's deeper. And there's so many different ways that you can connect to that source, you know, however you call it, you know, the great white eagle in the sky, Allah, God. There's just so many ways to get there. And, you know, with religion or, you know, based on your intent or with projections, you know, you start seeing these things that come out of it, and it's positive, and it's loving, and love wins all of everything. And that's what she has seen, and she stands by my side. And it did take a while to reach that, but I didn't want to back down because I knew it was going to be good. And I've seen things, just beautiful things, emerge over the last 3 years when I sincerely gotten really deeper into this. And I'm going to go higher, and I'm going to keep helping as many people as I can. So, you know, that's a real excellent comment you made about this. And anybody that's listening, you got to lead by example, and you got to show why you're doing this and how this can help others. And so that's what has really made the difference.
Has she become more interested or curious herself about the actual process of going out of body?
Not really. I mean, you know, we do have some lengthy discussions. You know, it's not for everybody. Everybody has different callings.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, and I don't force myself, you know, with my beliefs or anything like that on her. If she's open to it and she wants to hear about an experience, or if there's certain experiences that I'm just bubbling up inside that I have to tell you, you know, I will. But she is very open, and she listens. And, you know, it's not for everybody. And we're drawn to different things for certain reasons, and, you know, that's one of them. And right now, my wife and I are drawn to adoption. We're going to be adopting in a couple years from China. And we're also looking at foster adoption, too, and helping kids that are in need. So, you know, everybody has their own, you know, calling in life. You know, if it's going down to the soup kitchen, or if it's just going to church every Sunday and praising God, or if it's just, you know, helping somebody off the street or a refugee. You know, we can't do everything, and we all have our interests, and that's what makes this world a beautiful place, because we're all there to help each other, and we just got to learn to work with each other and respect each other's boundaries, religions, faiths, gods, and creeds.
Well, I think it's really tremendous that you have really evolved so much as a result of having these out-of-body experiences and all the research and work that you've done, and setting an example. Indeed, this is really, really wonderful, and I'm so pleased that you've been able to do this. And that's actually what I was referring to. I know that after people hear about some of this stuff, they become curious and, I wonder if that might work for me too, or what have you, or just interested enough to be open, you know, and more interested in what you go through and that type of thing, and how it might affect you at any given moment when you are actually going out of body. And that was something I was kind of interested in too. Oh, we've just got a minute here. If you know, if it affects you differently when somebody else is present when you're going OBE versus when you are alone. So, you know, it was that type of thing I was actually wondering about. But I'm really, really pleased that you've been with us this week. And again, on such short notice, we were not able to get hold of Ned Dougherty. So we'll just have to look into that again some other time. But David, it's been wonderful having you with us again. Your website is invisiblelight.com. We've been speaking to David A. Warner, who is a very experienced out-of-body experiencer and is working on a book. And everyone would like to encourage you, indeed, go visit his website. And it's been wonderful having you with us this week. You have been listening to Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you that it is only with the heart that one sees rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please do remember that only love prevails. Next week we are going to have on our show Dr. Pim van Lommel. He is from the Netherlands and he's done extensive work with cardiac arrest people who've had near-death experiences. It's going to be a tremendous show, so you'll definitely want to tune in then. Thank you very much for joining us this week on Toward the Light. Love and blessings to all. We will talk to you next week.